Cobram Estate is the most awarded Australian extra virgin olive oil. Let it be the hero when entertaining family and friends. Cobram Estate extra virgin olive oil is fresh and full of flavour. Perfect for roasting, frying, baking, dressing salads and for dipping bread. Make your food taste even better with a little help from Cobram Estate. Premium quality, great tasting and a versatile healthy alternative. Buy in store at all major retailers.
Clubby Sports.
Hello and welcome to Season 1, Episode 2 of The Siren, also known as Air Raid, also known as the Air Raid Siren. We will commit to a name before the end of the year. So where Mitch and I get to have our 7 or 8 minutes each talking about things that aren't trade. We can actually talk about football.
What a treat for the listeners last week. A little pop-up episode. It's going to carry on through the season.
Air Raid Siren brought to you by Callaway. Did you play golf this week?
No, I didn't.
We need to, like, it's all fun and games that you know, Callaway are on board, but you need to go and actually live it.
The Qantas link that took me down to Devonport couldn't fit the golf clubs on, unfortunately. I was eyeing off Barnboogle.
So you had to just be able to do that. How old are the golf clubs you got?
How old am I? Probably 14 years old.
Okay, yeah, we need to sort that out.
Like, we know some people.
We do.
You would have played in the last 7 days?
I played, yep. I played last week after we recorded Air Raid at Victoria Golf Club.
Take us, for those sort of in my side of the world, is that a top 20 course?
Top 10 to 15 course in the country.
Wow.
One of the more prestigious golf courses in the Southern Hemisphere. I'm lucky to have a friend who's a member there.
So it's like the Caulfield committee room of golf courses.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Started horribly, then made a ridiculous up and down on a par 3 to make par. Was happy with that. Then bomb driver, hit 6-iron to 10 foot on a par 5, lipped out for eagle.
What's a bomb driver?
I don't know, 265-ish.
Oh, I thought it was a club.
This is a shocking joke. Then made par and thought I was on for, 40 points and then just completely disintegrated. It started raining and I play golf in the rain like I played football in the rain. I might as well not be on the field.
Really?
Yeah. Shocking.
So you're the opposite Jimmy Bartel.
Correct.
What did you do in the wet when you played footy? Just want to go and hide in a hole somewhere?
I might as well have just taken myself to the bench.
Long sleeves?
No, but sort of like outside half forward flanker. Yeah. And like when you're outside, you need to be a good kick and I wasn't.
Right.
Not when the ball got heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How'd you go on those Tuesday and Thursday nights when the ball was waterlogged on a
No, I was a great trainer.
Right.
Great, yeah, because there's no pressure.
Yeah, right.
I would train the house down. Sense. Look really good on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Yeah.
And then people would forget I was playing on Saturday. Okay, can I start this week?
Yeah.
Okay, great, because you started last week and I thought that was really selfish of you, so I want to start this week. I want to talk about umpiring. And not just field umpiring. In fact, not as much even field umpiring. I want to talk about goal umpires. I really fear that they're going the way of lines people in tennis. And I understand that a lot of people would argue that tennis is much better without the lines people and it's a bit cleaner and I get that. But football isn't as black and white as tennis. It's not as cut and dry. There's emotion. It's a 360-degree game. There's things that happen. There's things that go wrong. So I heard a lot of commentary on the weekend about why are they score reviewing this and it hasn't touched the post and why are we wasting time and, we should just be able to do it automatically. And we've got Laura Kane, the new head of football, talking about chips in the ball. And I just think, Mitch, we're going to get to a point where in 10 years' time, I fear that when the ball is kicked from a set shot for goal, it's just going to, a chip in a ball is going to pass through a laser sensor in the posts and it'll just come up on the ground as goal or point or out in the full. And I remember growing up, but I still do it to this. I don't know if you do this. When there's a set shot for goal, if I'm watching on the wing, I watch the goal umpire to see how far he or she moves, left or right. Because if they start running, it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's not going to be a goal. Whereas if they, do that thing and they stop and they lift their head up, it's like, oh, it's a straight kick.
I hope we got that on the video for the YouTube.
Yeah, they sort of, they straighten the arms and then they...
Watching it. Straight over the goal umpire's hat.
Going to the G when I was little, watching Fev kick, I would just watch the goal umpire. And I don't know if we want to get to a point where... I can't watch the English Premier League anymore because when a player scores a goal, they don't even celebrate now because they're like, oh, we're just going to make sure for the VAR if they go through the last 45 seconds, if there wasn't a foul at left back in the build-up. And I really worry, and this is why I'm turning the goal umpiring into umpiring in general and technology. I really worry we're going to get to the point where, hey, if we can have the technology in scores, why can't we have the technology in ridiculous holding the ball decisions? And, oh, well, I don't know why the average fan talks like this, by the way. While we're at it, each team should be given 3 challenges a game at umpiring decisions in the build-up to a goal. Please, for goodness sake, let's get to that point.
The chances of that staying 100%, like if we go down the ball chip and we have the result on the screen, the odds of that stacking up for the full season is slim, right?
Yeah, so I was in the box on Friday before 3RB football. I'm not going to name names here because it's irrelevant. But the people in the back of the box, you know, across the networks, they all sort of talk before, which is great fun. And so much of the talk was from the previous night from Carlton Richmond about, oh, how ridiculous was that 50-metre penalty that ended up being a 60-metre penalty? You know, well, I forget the one it was. Was it against Baker? It was a stiff 50, but it ended up going 60 and put whoever it was within kicking distance. And I just went, okay. I shrugged. And they're like, whoa, is that not a big deal? And I'm like, well, if umpires give away 150-metre penalties, they probably get 98.5 spot on, one to 2 metres out. Like, we're talking about one. Like, who cares? Like, are we actually going to get to a point where, so if there's a chip in the ball, are the umpires going to have a wristwatch that connects them to the chip in the ball that also tells them whether the kick goes 15 metres or not? And if it goes 14.9, it's play on. If it goes 15.
Actually, now you mention it, I've agreed with everything you've said in this podcast up until that point. Why don't the umpires just have a little thing on their hand?
No, because technology is going to ruin it.
But we can track to it. We can track everyone to within an inch of their life at the moment. We should have the 50-metre penalty tracked.
But Mitch, there'll be a situation where at some point the technology breaks down or like
that. That's what I'm getting at with the goal review stuff.
Yeah, our game is so beautiful because it is so authentic. And for want of a better phrase, shit happens. Now, I know that that doesn't help fans when things happen in dying moments of games that cost them finals. Like, I get why Adelaide was so frustrated with what happened in that game against Sydney.
But that wasn't a technology fault. That was just
human error.
Human error, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's a little bit like I'm going to call an air raid siren on the air raid siren. Because we're going to get
into... You can't do that. It's not in the rules.
No, but I know, but it's like going to get into an issue that I don't want to talk about. But it's a little bit like what the AFL is trying to do with concussion. It's like, I completely get what they're doing, but you can only mitigate against serious injury to a certain degree. It's the same with the technology. You can put technology in every aspect of the game that you want to, if you really want to, but at what point does it diminish and or dilute the value of the beauty of the game? That's my 5-minute rant.
I like that.
You?
I feel the passion. I can feel young Sam in his navy blue jumper coming out in the
25 on the back.
Air raid siren of 2024. Can I have my two bulbs on the advantage rule? I don't think it's – I can't – I've never been more confused with the advantage rule right now. Sometimes it's paid, sometimes it's not.
Yeah, they bring it back, yeah.
That's the first 2 weeks has been frustrating.
That's a fair point, actually.
My air raid siren item for tonight is all the angst and – commentary around Justin Lomu's 1-year extension that paid dividends for itself in one game on the weekend. Now, it's impossible to determine, but if he went into that game out of contract, would his Fremantle players have been as committed for him? You would never know.
Wow, so you think it was a fillip?
I think it only helped Fremantle beat Brisbane on the weekend, and I think all
Did
the commentary
last season though.
Well, you can only go on results we've had, and they're 1-1. All this talk around them signing
You really think Justin Longmuir re-signing had an impact on the group?
If it's 1% or 2%, I think there would have been some impact. Okay. I think the players, all pre-season, the stigma and the notion around Fremantle has been, is the coach there? Every player in every interview is being asked about it. I think that would have put their minds at ease, 1% or 2% going into that game. And footy's a 1% or 2% game on a lot of occasions. All the talk around Justin Longmuir, they extended him for 1 year. What they did, they actually extended him for this year plus 1 more year. So he was signed, it's not a 23-game extension, it's a 46-game extension. And all this talk around, they've just kicked the can down the road. There is a small element of that, I won't lie, because you don't see coaches often get 1-year extensions. Usually they get Usually they get two or threes. But this is a two-year extension essentially because he's got 2024 to run and 2025. And with the protections in these contracts right now, if Fremantle get to the end of this year and get to the same scenario had he not had the contract, there is some security in them that they don't have to pay the full whack out under the way that the new contracts are written. I just think it takes the heat out of the situation for Fremantle, and it makes the players' mindset frees them up to be able to go and play footy rather than this hanging over their head. And clubs, they'll never say it in the moment when the coach is out of contract, but afterwards you always hear clubs say it was a distraction we didn't need to have. And I think it helps Fremantle, if they're going to play finals this year, gives them a little bit better of a chance than they would have had he remained in 2024 existing on his only contract.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. I'm not positive that I agree with you, but I understand the theory behind it. Yeah, because there would be some people who say, why do senior coaches need so much security with contracts?
And people say that Luke Beveridge signed last year for 2 years on top of a 1 year, so essentially a three-year extension, and everyone's like, well, that was too early. So what, people want Fremantle to sign him for two?
Yeah.
They have hedged their bets a little bit, but I think it helps them in the short term, doesn't hinder.
Yeah. If I'm Freo, I'm waiting to the midpoint of the year. Because I think by then you've got a fair sense as to how people are going. Because
That worked for Port last year with Ken Hinckley.
Yeah.
But there's not every guarantee that happens at every other club.
No. Horses for courses, every situation's different. The proof will be in the pudding. But where do you expect Freo to finish this year?
They should be contending for finals. Their list is worse this year than what it was when they made and won a final in 2022.
Agreed.
They've got three first-round picks. Obviously, they're going to go after Logan McDonald. I think the McDonald-Amos 1-2 punch would be pretty good for the future of that footy club.
Mm.
Now, they've had a lot of key forwards come and go over the journey. Most haven't worked. But Amos is already a 40-goal-a-year kicker, and he was super against Brisbane in that back line that was patrolled by Harris Andrews. That's no mean feat to do what he did on the weekend. And then Logan McDonald's a top five pick that every club in Australia would want on their list. So maybe outside of Carlton because they've got two already. So I think that's where their mind's at. Now, does that help Dustin Longmire this year? No. But I think what they've been able to do with this contract does give them some peace of mind. I mentioned on the main ep this week that I've got a new favourite player in the competition, and it is Michael Frederick of the Fremantle Dockers. We all thought doom and gloom on this Dockers forward line when Lachie Schultz requested a trade back to Victoria for compassionate reasons, for family and to get back to Victoria. Well, Frederick could be the answer in that half forward. He almost acted like a mini centre half forward on the weekend. His hit up and his ability to get up and back, and this is air raid siren territory. But I like him, and he's just sort of maturing into the competition. I don't know his age off the top of my head. He'd be, 23, 24 now? I think he's just starting to hit his straps. Witkowski is an underrated player. No one's as good as Lachie Schultz in that conversation, but I think that Dockers forward line, which we all questioned and we all have questioned at times, they kicked 90 points against a team that played in a grand final last year who was seen with Harris Andrews down there, one of the better defences.
Just one for Scotty and our listeners, one to think about for the future of tradies when we go back. I'd like to ask the question to both of us at the end of the home and away season, how has Schultz in Ginnivan out aged for the Pies?
That is
just an interesting watch.
Yep.
Because no one would have even thought that Ginnivan was as good a player as Schultz when both left at the end of 23. But I don't know. I saw some good things from Ginnivan in Hawthorn colours, and sometimes players like Schultz don't fit into the clubs that they go to. It's nothing to do with how good a player they are. I just that's just one to watch.
Yeah. He's a star, Lachie Schultz. And I'm not saying you don't rate him, but let's give that a few weeks. I wouldn't mind us dressing at the end of the year.
Yep. That was the siren brought to you by Callaway. Thanks for listening to another podcast from Producers Clubby Sports Network. If you enjoyed the show, then it would be a massive help if you could like, follow, rate, subscribe, tap the bell, leave a review, or even share it with your friends. If you want to get in touch to share feedback, suggestions, or advertise with one of our podcasts, then email hello@producy.com.